What do white privilege, female privilege, and dating apps have in common? Turns out more than you think. Today, we're peeling back the layers on masculinity, media myths, and why goodwill towards men is apparently a controversial idea. Buckle up. Jack Kammer is in the house, and he's not pulling any punches. Welcome back to another episode of Digital Dating, and I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew. And if you haven't noticed, the show has a new name and some other subtle changes you might hear. Please follow, like, and subscribe on whatever platform you are listening to me now, especially if you are on Apple or Spotify. I have also launched a new show called The Weekend Rant. I made that its own podcast, as you guys seem to have liked those episodes on here so much. But they really didn't belong on a dating podcast. So this new show allows me to really speak my mind on many topics outside of the dating world. So tune into The Weekend Rant with Anonymous Andrew wherever you listen to your podcasts. And let's get on to today's show. Tonight, I have Jack Kammer, who is an author, and he's got some master's degrees in sociology, or actually he's going to help me with this. There's quite a list here. He's an author, a radio host. He mentors men and boys. He was in a parole officer. The list goes on. So welcome, Jack. Welcome to the show. And please tell us where you are today and what it is that you do, because I don't know.
Sometimes I'm not sure either, Andrew. I do want to correct one thing. I don't mentor men and boys.
Okay.
I am not that nice. What I do is advocate for men and boys.
Okay.
I do have a degree in social work, but I am not the kind of social worker who works in a clinical setting, in a one-on-one setting with clients. I worked at the macro level on issues of policy, and I worked as a trainer for people who worked with individual men, but they worked with individual men in classes. When I was with National Fatherhood Initiative, I taught several state correctional system personnel groups to run National Fatherhood Initiative's program for incarcerated fathers to help those fathers keep their relationships with their kids alive while they were locked up and to facilitate growing those relationships once the fathers got out. And the prison systems know that this is a good thing because having relationships on the outside helps keep men from coming back into prison, and nobody wants that.
Yeah, no. And of course, we see it all too often when the father goes off to prison for anything, whatever, you know, it could be a DWI all the way up to, you know, burglary or violence or whatever. The children, or especially the boys, And I guess the daughters are affected by their dad not being around for 10, 15, 20 years. So you facilitate them to keep an open communication and help them establish that. And then once they get out, they can nurture that.
That's the idea.
Okay, great. All right.
So you had a question about what do I do? So what do I do now? You want me to
pick please. That up?
Okay. So I am retired, first of all. So I pretty much do whatever the hell I want.
I love that. Okay.
And luckily, I have a lot that I want to do and like to do. Talking and working and advocating around the social and emotional issues, the legal issues, cultural issues of men and boys has been my passion since 1983. When I started my radio show in 83, it was sort of a Phil Donahue show. You know, it was sort of about relationships between men and women. Doing that show once a week and talking to experts, psychologists, serious experts of on sociology, psychotherapy, it became very quickly clear that there are a lot of important social issues. Not that male-female relationships aren't important social issues, but lots of really, you know, sometimes life and death social issues connected to what's really going on with men. I mean, I started my show with the idea that I wanted to take a good hard look at this crazy idea that it's a man's world, men don't have any problems, gee, aren't men lucky, and gee, aren't women so oppressed and disadvantaged. I knew that was baloney. But when I started looking at men at the lower rungs of our society, that's where I really saw it. That's where I really saw it. Because those guys don't have any of the advantages of being a man. You know, typically economic and political power. But they've got all of the disadvantages of being a man. Plus, if they're of a minority group, they get, you know, issues of ethnic or racial bigotry against them. So, you know, it's more than just, you know, smiling and happiness and can't we all get along? You know, this is serious, actually life and death stuff, life and death stuff sometimes.
What? Wow. I can't believe just yesterday I was listening to a podcast and there was a co-host and guest talking about white privilege. Can you talk about that for a moment? Is there such a thing? And is it something that's affecting?
It's not something I am an expert on.
Okay.
I will say that just as a human being, as a man, I think there are certainly some advantages that I, as a white person, have over a lot of the black fellas I know. I mean, just in terms of social capital. I mean, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And I know probably a lot more powerful people than the average black man I know. You know, if I need help, if I need a favor, if I need an introduction, if I need a good job, you know, I certainly have a leg up there over most minority men. So yeah, I think there is such a thing as white privilege. What I'm more interested in talking about, actually, Andrew, what I'm much more attuned to and what I think needs to be talked about as well is there is a female privilege. And I like to talk about that because it's talked about very little. Whenever we want to talk about sexism, we're typically talking about the ways in which women are disadvantaged. But there are ways in which women are advantaged. And I mentioned that I wrote a book that was canceled. This was in 1994. I published a book called Goodwill Toward Men. It was a book of interviews with 22 women, most of whom considered themselves feminists, who accepted my invitation to please come and talk to me for the book about not just women's disadvantages as women, but women's advantages as women, and not just men's advantages as men, but men's disadvantages as men. I invited them because I had seen various things in the public media that they had written or spoken about and knew that these were people who felt goodwill toward men. And they were very interested in talking about the half of the sexism equation, or inequation maybe, that doesn't get talked about. One of the things I like to say is the most sexist idea of all is that only men are ever sexist and only women are ever harmed by sexism. So I did a book of 22 interviews, of interviews with 22 women who agreed with me and wanted to talk about the advantages that women have and the disadvantages men have. Well, it was a great book. It started out to be a great book before it got buried. My editor was sending me notes saying, I'm getting incredibly excited about this book. Just as it was being published, the staff of St. Martin's Press rose up and said, we're not going to work on this book. We're not going to help promote it. We're not going to help get it out there. The book got canceled before canceling was a thing. So there is definitely something called female privilege that really does exist. And I think that women are really, really, really defensive about it, like these women at St. Martin's Press were. They do not want it talked about. They do not want it recognized. I think primarily because they know how great their advantages are and they don't want anybody mucking it up for them. So they have to deny that they have any advantages and claim that they are oppressed, that men are their oppressors. It's crazy. Especially if we go back to talking about the men at the lower rungs of our society.
Okay.
Those guys, they don't have the power to oppress much of anybody, at least not legally.
Explain to me. So the book was never published and these 22 stories were never came to light. So nobody ever saw them. Can you?
It was published, but it was very quickly withdrawn and
withdrawn.
It never really got into distribution.
Right. And that, these were before the Amazon days where...
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is female privilege, and what were you trying to say? And because I'm curious, I'm really curious, and I think I might agree with you a little bit, but I don't know. I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. So can you give us some examples?
Sure. Well, this was back in, I did the interviews in 93. So it was, you know, it was not a surprise that a lot of women wanted to talk about what they had seen happening to their sons, their brothers, their husbands in their first marriages, in the husband's first marriages. You know, terrible things that happened to them in relationship to their kids. I mean, that's, you know, that's no surprise. That's certainly a privilege women have, that when there's a divorce, they can pretty much expect that they're at least going to have joint custody, you know, whereas men, and in 1994, joint custody was a very rare thing. It was pretty common back then for men in divorce to hear from their lawyers, the best thing you can do if you really love your kids is walk away. Don't put them through a custody battle. Yeah, I know, it's craziness, but that's the kind of disadvantage that men had.
Well,
other disadvantages men have. We're sentenced more. We get longer sentences for the same crimes, even with the same criminal records, than women do. Today, if there's a dispute between a man and a woman about what happened on a date, what's the word? Believe the woman.
Correct.
What's that get down to? Call the man a liar.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a very strong bias in favor of women and against men. Since the Black Lives Matter movement started, we've all done a pretty good job of looking at implicit bias, you know, bias that we don't even recognize we have. Recent research has found that the strongest implicit bias of all is not against racial minorities. It's not against Black people. It's certainly not against female people. The greatest, strongest, deepest implicit bias of all is against men. So, you know, that's an example of those are examples of ways in which men are disadvantaged and women are advantaged.
I'm going to go back a few minutes ago when you talked about divorces, and I was divorced in 92, and I got to be very, very, very careful how I talk about this story, because the people that are in the story, or they either listen to the podcast or they will hear about it. But yeah, I got to be careful here. But the bottom line was what you said was what happened to me. I lost custody of my children in the divorce, and I had supervised visits. I had, the once every 2 weeks, and then one day during the week or something, and then 1 week during the summer. And I had proof. I'm stumbling over my words here because I got to be very careful. I had proof that the other person in the divorce was not up to the task, let's just say. So yeah, I could see where you're going. I'm sorry. Because I just realized, the more I say, the more I'm going to get in trouble. But I did go through that. By the way, you also talked about the Black man and being disadvantaged. The Latino man is disadvantaged, especially today with the administration we have in the office. So I don't know if we want to get off into politics, because I really try to stay away from that. But this country was built on immigrants. It was all about immigrants, and everybody came over, and my grandfather came over from Italy, and yada, yada, yada. So I don't know if I firmly believe in what's being done today, except if you're a criminal and you're an immigrant and you're here illegally, I think you should be deported. But let's not get into that. But I just wanted to mention that Latinos, would you agree that are on that list? Yeah.
Yes. Baltimore, where I grew up, where I was born, grew up, where I worked as a jail guard, where I was a parole and probation agent. Baltimore is a majority Black city.
Right.
There is a pretty sizable enclave of Latinos in East Baltimore, but I don't get over there too much. So I really don't know a lot about Latino men. I really didn't see a lot of them in the jail, actually. My main contact with Latino men is in landscaping. We've got some property here, and, you know, in the summer, they're here every week, and, you know, they work hard, and they're nice. And I, you know, can only imagine what did they go through to get here. My brother is an expert on the immigration issue. He's a journalist, wrote a book about it, covered the issue for the Arizona Republic in Phoenix, the newspaper. And he calls himself a liberal restrictionist. He does believe that immigration can be very good for the country, but he does believe that there need to be some restrictions. That's where he comes down on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. But you said, but.
Well, I was going to say, but, you know, we are getting a little far afield from what my expertise is in.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
My specialty is.
I just have somewhat of a soft heart for the Latino community. And let's just leave it at that. When I was a young boy, I visited South America and I was a student exchange and I spent some time in Colombia and Ecuador and whatever. And I speak somewhat fluent Spanish. So anyway, let's see if we can segue this whole topic into what my podcast is about, is dating. Because that's, if we could take some of your expertise and some of your experience of all those years of working with men, and in your bio and before we recorded, you talked about an idea for a new dating app. And I'd like to possibly get into that. And I also think that you have a story you want to talk about how you met your wife.
It's relevant to the discussion of dating apps. You want me to get into that?
Sure. I think that'd be a great way to kick it off.
Okay. So this is about older people. When I turned 60 and I was still single, had never been married, I figured, oh God, I guess if I'm going to find anybody to be with, you know, in my golden years, I better get busy here. And I just bit the bullet and said, okay, I'm 60. I'm not going to pretend I'm a spring chicken. And I found a platform called Senior People Meet. All right. So I put myself on Senior People Meet. I was working as a parole and probation. No, I think I was working as a jail guard. No, I was a parole and probation agent at the time. And I wasn't making any money, but I was doing my mission. And my mission was to try to really understand what's going on with men, especially men at the lower rungs of our economic and social systems. So I felt very good about the job. I just wasn't making any money. So I got on to Senior People Meet and I bought 1 month of the service because that's how little money I had. I get to the checkout and it says $99 or was it $29.99? I don't know. Plus $2.99 for a handling fee. And I was like, $2.99? Come on. Where'd that come from? Well, I backed it up to see if they mentioned that because I didn't want to be ripped off for my $2.99 because that was, you know, money to me back then. And they had mentioned it. So, okay, click. I click and I join Senior People Meet. All right. So I'm on there for a couple of weeks and I don't really see anybody I like very much. Nobody matches with me. Meanwhile, there's this woman, let's call her C, who is on Senior People Meet. And she's not seeing anybody she likes either. And she's wondering, why can't I find anybody? Why am I not getting any matches? And then she thought, well, maybe I should change my profile. And she changed her profile, income expectation. You know, they ask, how much money do you think your ideal man's going to make? And my wife is very successful as a scientist. She's a professor at a university in Baltimore. She's retired now. She was making good money. She also made some money and some investments, and she had a lot of dough. And she figured just without even thinking about it that, well, anybody that I'm going to be interested in is probably going to make, I don't know, at least 300. That's what she checked off. But after she found nobody at 300K, she said, well, I don't really need a man to make a lot of money. That's not really what I'm looking for. She unchecked 300K, and I popped up.
Wow.
I popped up.
Wow.
With my 34K or 32K, I think I actually made less money as a parole and probation agent than I did as a jail guard. So I popped up and I knew right away we were going to get married. And I think she did too. We just, it was like babadoo, babading, like, yes, this is.
You clicked. The chemistry was
there.
We
clicked.
Yeah.
We clicked. And so neither of us has any kids. She could not find a man while she was in her younger years who wanted to support her career by taking care of a large share of the family duties. And in my younger years, I couldn't find a woman who didn't want me out there working full time, making as much money as I could. So the idea for this app that I ask you to take a look at, and it's really just the seed of an idea. It's an app. It's not a hookup app. Hookup app.
Good.
You know, I think that's, is that the Tinder thing where you swipe left and you swipe right? And it's all about getting together for one night stands. This is not about that. This is about when you're a little older, maybe, you know, when you're beginning to think about maybe settling down with a life partner to have a family, have some kids, and, you know, maybe even look forward to some grandkids. because I hear they're even better. It's for people who want work-life balance. And it's not just for the woman to get work-life balance. You know, if you say work-life balance in a corporation, typically what comes to mind is the woman needing to wear two hats. She's at the job, she's at home. At the job, at home. Not so much men. Now, it's not because men don't want to, in my estimation. The Pew Research Center recently found that men, even more than women, say that they don't spend enough time with their kids. It's, you know, it's the cultural expectations, also the corporate cultural expectations. You know, men are still feeling like, you know, the main thing they can do to show their love for their families is make as much money as they can. That's not what I want. I think more and more and more, it's not what young men want generally. They want to be fully involved, committed fathers with solid, loving, intimate relationships with their kids for two reasons. One, because they want the relationship and with their kids. And two, they know that they are really important to their kids. The science is very clear about that.
I agree.
It wasn't so long ago when fathers were dismissed. You know, what does a father know about helping to raise a kid? Well, there's a lot of science that shows fathers make a big difference in their kids. So
absolutely.
This app that I am hoping somebody will take a liking to and run with is an app that doesn't ask, what's your favorite color? And what sign are you? And do you like to take, you know, and do you like to take walks on the beach? No. It gets right down to it. Do you want to have kids? How much money, what percentage of the household income will you agree to be responsible for? And about how much money do you think that's going to be that you want to take responsibility for making? What percentage of the home life do you want to be involved in? Those kinds of things. So that men and women can find partners who will support them so that both can have a happy work life and a happy home life. It can't just be the woman having work life balance and the man slaving away 80 hours a week at the job. That's just not what young men want. Young men want these days. And if a young man gets trapped into that, you know, it's going to be something he's going to have problems with. He might resent it, and it's going to be a problem. So start from the get-go. Those are the major questions when you're at the point in your life where you want to start thinking about settling down. Let's get right to it. How is this partnership going to work? Are we compatible on these important life issues? And that's what people would be swiping for, you know, on this app. It's called No, Really, I Insist.
I love it because as we talked about before we recorded, and I'm in my third season of the podcast, I'm taking a very deep dive and researching all the dating apps. And where is the problem? Because people are complaining from on social media, and you just listen to other podcasts. They're fatigued with the dating apps because, from my perspective, and I've been on almost every major dating app except some of the really higher, like Raya and all that stuff, which are celebrities. But the mainstream dating, I've been on all of them. And they just haven't changed since I was, again, on Match and eHarmony, which I thought at the time eHarmony had something going. They had this nice half-hour thing. You had to sit down and take all these questions, and they did this whole intake thing. And then they deemed your personality type, and then they would help you match it. At the time, it was innovative and new. But they're doing the same thing 20 years later. Nothing's changed. And I could go off on some other things about eHarmony that I don't particularly care for today. But all of the dating apps, except for little niches or something, they try different. Like Hinge, they have these roses, and Bumble, the woman has to talk first, and yada yada. They're all the same algorithm. And so from my research, I'm trying to figure out, is it the apps themselves that are the problem? And I've had people say to me, the apps are just a tool. They're like your toolbox. If you're building something or you're working on a project in your home, you go get your toolbox and you take out your hammer and your pliers or whatever. It's just a toolbox. And if you know how to use the tools, you'll get the project done. Or is it the people on the dating apps that are the problem? And I have come to find that it is a little bit of both because the dating apps just haven't changed. But the people on the dating apps are, especially in our age group, let's just say the over 50, many of the women, and I'd love your viewpoint, I'd love your perspective on this. A lot of women in their 50s now are getting out of marriages. See, the kids are off to college and they dissolve the marriage and they get a hefty settlement, right? And or they maybe they have worked. I'm not judging them. I'm just saying women now today in their 50s, they have their money. They have these beautiful co-ops and condos and they're driving a Mercedes. I play pickleball on Sundays, and there's this woman that's single that I know, very attractive, and trying to work on asking her out for a date. And she's single, but she drives a convertible Mercedes. I mean, where did she get that from? So I don't know if she got that in the divorce or if she worked all her life. Again, I'm not judging. It's good for her. But you'll see women are becoming complacent in their, have everything I need. I have money. I have the house. I have a future. I have my retirement. I don't need a man, except when it comes time for romance or maybe not security financially, but security just to be know that they're safe, that they have a man in the house, something like that. So any thoughts on, because when I go through some of these dating apps profiles, I see what you hear. I'm looking for a 6 foot tall man. I'm looking for a six-figure income. He's got to have a six-pack ab, you know, so he's got to be in physical shape. It's the 666 syndrome. And it's just not realistic. And then you throw in the political side. You got a divide right down the middle in America today. Politics, right? So women have these deal breakers. If you voted for Trump, don't even contact me. Swipe left. Or I see the other side if you didn't vote for Trump. So any thoughts on that?
Yes, many. This phenomenon is also happening for younger people as well, from what I'm hearing from the young people I read and talk to. Hearing from young men, very much what you said, that young women are making money. What the hell do they need a man for? This is really not surprising if you think about what's been going on in our culture for probably about the last 40 years. Think about all of the stereotypes that we used to have about women and how we use those stereotypes to convince ourselves that women, that corporations and businesses didn't really need women except maybe to be the secretaries. You know, lots of stereotypes. Women aren't logical. They aren't smart. They cry too much. They can't make tough decisions. They just want to make everybody happy. They just want to file their nails and eat bonbons and go shopping and all of that crazy stuff. Tons of stereotypes against women kept women from being recognized as valuable people in corporations. Today, what do we have? Tons of stereotypes about men. Very negative stereotypes about men.
I agree.
Men are violent. Men are cruel. Men are impatient. Men are stupid. Men are sex crazed. Men just want to drink beer, sit on the sofa, and watch football. They're sexual harassers. Da-da-da-da-da-da. They're clueless. They're worthless. Who needs them? And it's very fashionable these days to be a woman who holds that view, because women want to be empowered, or they want to present themselves as empowered. And one of the ways you can be presenting yourself as empowered is to say, you're so powerful, you don't even want a man. You don't need a man, until they do.
Right.
The problem here, I think, is that the time-honored value of men has just been savagely trashed.
Yes.
By media, yep. Blitz. By memes.
Hollywood, social media, absolutely.
Yes. And so, hear the word men, what image flashes into their mind? Homer Simpson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Something like that.
No, I agree. Yeah. And so what are your, okay, only because I think this is part of the problem. You are probably familiar with the red pill movement and the MAGNOW movement, the men going their own way. Men, there's a whole movement of men saying, we don't need women. Just the reverse of what we're talking about. The women saying, we don't need men. Now there are men, and I don't know what generation or age generation, but this is a bunch of men that say, we don't need women. I've heard of the red pill movement, and I'm not even 100% sure what it's all about, but it's something about bashing women.
That's a, you know, a very big, very big issue right now, that men just have been savaged. Our reputation has been savaged. We are no longer regarded as desirable commodities. There are books out there now, very empowered books written by very empowered women.
Oh boy,
I'm rolling my eyes, saying things like, are men necessary? And it's the end of men. And Hillary Clinton is saying the future is female. It's a horrible spate of ugliness being directed toward men. And, we're just sort of gobsmacked. We don't know.
But what do these women think? So if that's the older women, like 50 and over, saying that, I get it. But the 20s, 30s, and 40s who want families, they need us.
Well, ideally, they do. Yes, they should know that they do. They should know that if they have kids, their kids, generally speaking, are going to do better if the kids have a father.
Correct.
Have a father in the home. Have a father who's involved in the home. You know, I got a piece of audio I could play for you, but it's probably not necessary. It's Kyle Pruitt from the Yale Child Study Center, who basically says, we got to stop fooling around about this. Of course, kids need their fathers. But, you know, not so long ago, that was not recognized. Young women today, they grew up drinking the feminist Kool-Aid from day one.
Yep.
Now, you know, I don't want to say that all young women are like that. I know that they're not. A lot of young women treasure and value their fathers, but a lot don't. And they're very caught up in this idea of female superiority, which of course necessitates the concept of male inferiority. And we're awash in it. We're awash in it. And young girls are thinking, why do I need a man? You know, they're thinking only about the traditional role of men making money. Why do I need a man? Why should I have a man in the house? Who needs a man in the house? I can make my own money. The mistake here is that just when men are getting to the point where they want to be more involved with their kids so that we can do the best possible service for our kids by being involved in a loving two-parent family, just at the time when we really want that, and we're telling the Pew Research Center, we want to spend more time with our kids, we're being discarded as being worthless to our kids.
I have three boys. So if you remember the show, My Three Sons, that's me, all right? And we don't have to get into particulars, but because of my recovery and my alcoholism, I was not there for one or two of them as they were growing up. And that's my bad. And, you know, I've done my amends and all that stuff. But the three boys are now men, and one's 37, 35, and 27. And the oldest is married to a doctor, female doctor, and both of them do very well. So he's in a financial institution thing and makes good money. And they have two children. And my son, the oldest, I see how much he's involved with my grandchildren. It makes my heart smile when I go to visit them. He is very much involved with them. And I kind of am jealous because I didn't do that when I was younger. I don't want to paint a picture that I was not an absent father. I was there. I was just drinking. So, you know, that's, you're there, but you're not there. The other two sons that I have, the younger ones, they seem, the middle boy is a playboy. He's good looking. He lives in Florida. And every time I call him, he's got another woman coming over for dinner and having dinner and sex and all that stuff. So he's having fun. The youngest one got burnt in his college days by two women who broke his heart. And he has taken a vow of chastity. And he said, I'm done with women. So I got three generations of sons that are all approaching the family scene completely different. I don't think I'm going to get a second set of grandparents from my other two sons. They just don't seem to want to settle down. And that's okay, because the oldest one did that for me. And I have two beautiful grandkids. But let's bring it to in our demographic. I'm going to be 65 in April. And as I told you before we recorded, I used to have zero problem dating women. And I've said this before to my audience, I was codependent. So one relationship ended, I jumped into another one. I just didn't want to deal with the grief. So I would just go back on the dating app, find the next one. And that, of course, is not healthy and it doesn't work and all sorts of toxicity involves. But I didn't have problems. I'd go back on the app and within 2 weeks, boom, we would match. We would go on a date. We'd say, let's commit. Yeah. In the past year that I've been intentionally dating, I cannot do that anymore. It seems like the women are being too picky. They don't respond. And what's interesting is that I'm finding that the women match with me. So I'll pick up my phone any given morning and I'll say, it'll say, hey, you got a match. Jane Doe likes you. So I'll go look and I'll see Jane Doe and I'll say, oh, she's a cutie. So I'll match. And I say, hi, Jane. Pleasure to meet you. And thank you for matching. Silence, crickets, like I didn't exist. And this is a repeat pattern that I'm seeing over and over again. Or we might have a couple of sentence chats and then 3 days later, she just disappears. So I just don't know what's going on. Like, do they want something? And if they don't, I'm very confused and I'm trying to figure this out.
Here's a wild guess. And this is just a wild guess. I think maybe what they want is to hear a response from a man who is wondering, why should I want to go out with you? And instead of the man being in the position of being sort of the damaged goods, culturally speaking, because he's male and not feeling very confident about himself and not feeling like he's in a strong position to require what he wants, he's sort of like, hey, anything, whatever you want. Maybe women want men to say, I know who I am. And I'm great. Who are you?
And it's interesting you say that because 5 years ago, I would be all Mr. Nice Guy, people pleasing, love bombing. And if I saw a beautiful woman and I got her attention, I would do everything and anything to keep that going. I'm now becoming those women. I've been single for 2 years and I have settled into this single lifestyle of mine now where I get up in the morning and I go to work and I come home at night and I have no one to answer to. I have nobody. There's a two-side coin here, obviously, where I can come and go as I please. I could do what I want. If I want to take my shoes off and kick them to the side, I don't have anybody that's going to nag me that, you know, why don't you put your shoes away? But on the other side of that coin is the loneliness, is the part where I would love to come home and have dinner with somebody and watch a movie or maybe not watch TV, maybe just sit on the couch and talk about our day. You get the idea. And this Saturday, maybe jump in the car and take a ride upstate and go see something. You know, let's say it was apple picking season. I love doing that kind of stuff. And there's one more caveat that I'm finding is that I'm not retired yet. All right. So some people retire at 65. They had a good job and they were able to put enough money away. I did. I kind of screwed up with the alcoholism. So I have to work until I'm 70. And I think a couple of women that I've been meeting have retired. I'm talking to one now who's retired. And she's telling me she's playing pickleball every day. And I'm like, God, I wish I had that. I wish I could retire and go play pickleball. I played pickleball this morning, but I won't play until next Sunday because I have, not only do I have to work, but I got two podcasts to put out, which I'm hoping will, what do you call that? Help me with my income at some point. So you get what, you see where I'm going? I'm working hard to keep my life, and I have a nice lifestyle and I make good money, but I'm trying to put away for my retirement, but I can't retire right now. So you talked about this work balance before. I'd like to find a woman who's also working, still working. And Monday through Friday, we do our jobs. And if we're close enough to each other geographically, yeah, maybe we can get together during the week and have dinner and maybe a sleepover or not. It's not that big of a deal. And then the weekends we would have our fun, whatever that might look like.
Yeah, it might very well be the way to go. Say, not yet retired, still working for another few years, looking for a woman who's got a similar schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the one I'm talking to now, she seems to be willy-go-nilly and like she's involved in all sorts of extra. And that's great. She's because I know where she retired from. She had a very good job in the city working for New York City government. And so she probably got a great pension. And so at 65, she retired. She got all her benefits. And that's great for her. But right now, I can't keep up with her because she's all over the place. And at 10 o'clock at night before I go to bed, I might pick up the phone and send her a message. And whatever, you get the idea. It's just not compatible at this moment. So, all right, Jack. So tell us a little bit about where people can find you online and what it is you're looking. Let's say my audience wants to get in touch with you, where they can do that.
Well, if they want to go to noreallyiinsist.com, they'll find a little form where they could give me their email address and say, yeah, if this ever happens, let me know.
All right. I'll be doing that.
Okay, great. But generally, you can see on the backdrop behind me that
yes,
my operation is called Male Friendly Media. It's just me. I don't make any money at it. I just, you know, I do blog posts and I have a pretty good time being a podcast guest. These issues are very salient and people want to talk about them. You can see that it says malefriendlymedia.com. That's where I have my work. That's where I have my stuff. If you want to read anything, you know, that I've written, that's where you'll find it. Podcasts, YouTube videos. I had a channel for a while. It's where my stuff is.
What would you say to a middle-aged male, 35 to 45, who might be struggling either in employment or in finding a partner? And yeah, let's say that they might be disadvantaged, a person of color, a person of economic downfall. Any advice to them on how to keep positive?
Yes, although it's probably not very, very going to be very effective. But you know, all I can say is that we all as men, not all men, but as men as a class, we are suffering from a very severe attack on our psyches, on our self-worth, on our culture. We're all toxic, right? Toxic masculinity. God.
Yes.
We're being assaulted. There is underway a very mean streak occurring toward men. If you're not bummed out by this, you're not paying attention. Don't think that you have a personal problem feeling bad here. Talk to your buddies about it. Even if they don't bring it up, you bring it up to them, and you will find many men who would say, I know that's right. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, this is wrong. This is not right, and we need to sort of stick together until this ugliness lifts. I can tell you that there are some good women out there who are trying to help us. I just did a podcast called Social Disruption with two wonderful women who are really gone to town to try to fight back against this ugliness toward men and to their sons and stepsons. It's, you know, maybe we can just sort of laugh wryly, knowingly that, you know, you're really, this tirade against men is really just a little bit like the cool kids in the high school cafeteria who don't want to hang around with the uncool kids. Girls are cool. Women are cool. We're empowered. Girls rule. Boys drool. And who needs you? It'll stop. It's just gonna be a while.
Unless the world population, they're looking to kill the population. I mean, biologically, we're not getting into.
No. They'll get themselves laid. They'll get pregnant, and they won't tell the man. And you know, they go off and they be empowered and they make babies.
Yeah.
So the birth rate, I don't think, is in any great danger of. Well, it's down. I don't know that it's going to crater any worse than it is. Can't lose our confidence about our value. And we can't get so desperate that we become even more desperate. So there is a whole group of men called the MGTOW. Do you know them? MG?
Yeah, men going their own way. That's what I was talking about before. Yeah, MGTOW. I used the wrong acronym.
Those guys get a bad reputation, a bad rap as far as I'm concerned, because I think your third son might be a MGTOW. The youngest one who's like had two bad breakups and is like done.
He's done.
Okay, he's done. I hope that the MGTOW guys aren't completely done, but I'm glad they're saying I'm out, with the understanding that I'm out until things change with women. But if women are going to continue being the way women have been, I'm not getting back in. I hope they change so that I can get back in.
I had a talk with him about this. We happened to work at the same place. I got him a job where I work, and I had a talk with him in the car on the ride home one night, and I said, change in your concept of dating and getting out there. He said, nope, I'm happy being single. And I said, what seems to be the roadblock? And you know what he said to me? I don't make enough money to date. No woman is going to want to date me. And you know what? He's a great looking kid. He's 27 years old, a 6 foot tall. He's got he doesn't have the sixes, but he's in good shape and he's 6 foot tall and he's a hard worker and he'd be a great boyfriend, but he's afraid of women.
So if no, really, I insist, ever gets off the ground, he would go onto that app and he would do a profile that says, here's my strong suit. I'm not so, here's my weakness. I'm not so good at making money, but I would make a wonderful father. And yeah. I would really like to find a woman who would not expect me, because I'm a man, to make money just because I'm a man any right. more than you would have liked to be told you couldn't be a lawyer because you're a woman.
Exactly. Wow.
And so, no, really, I insist, says, here's a great guy, doesn't make a lot of money, doesn't want to make a lot of money, doesn't feel good about making a lot of money because he doesn't like the whole corporate thing, or doesn't have a trade or an occupation. What he really wants is relationships, and he wants to have an intimate female partner to have a family with. And the good news is that there are more and more women who are in a position to say, yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Now, they're going to have to explain this to their girlfriends, because their girlfriends are all holding out for the guys who make the six figures. Mm-hmm. And she says, no, he's really wonderful. He just doesn't make a lot of money, and we're dating, and we might get married. That could happen.
Yeah.
And why not? I mean, she wants to have a career. She needs somebody to help her at home. He wants to be at home with the kids. He needs somebody to make some dough. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. I agree with you. As a matter of fact, you see that more and more today, especially after COVID, men are staying home. So whether they're working from home, or they lost their jobs, or the wife is the breadwinner, men are now staying home watching the kids. The stay-at-home dads, they're called now. And I'm hearing more and more and more of them.
Yes.
And interesting.
And when you see them at the playground, just...
Yep.
You know, ask them how they like that gig. And here's what they'll always tell you. This is what I've always heard when I ask the question, hey, how you like the dad thing? They'll say, well, I love it, but it's a lot of work, but I love it. And then I say, well, you know, remember, work was a lot of work, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they laugh. Yeah. They say, yeah, work was a lot of work, but this work I love better. I love better.
Yeah. So, no, I couldn't agree more. All right, Jack, we got to wrap it up.
Very good.
An amazing conversation. Really, I like your perspective, and I like your concept. And I hope some investor, please invest in this app. It sounds like what we need. These apps are just broken, or like a broken record. They may have worked at one time, because I got laid, I got dates, I got relationships for years, but they're not working anymore. So we need a new, fresh perspective on the dating app. Some company's got to come in. And now with AI, hopefully maybe they can, I don't know, do something different, whatever. So topic for another day. Everybody, Jack Kammer is with us. And I'd like to thank Jack for coming on the show today.
And I'd like to thank Andrew for having me on the show today.
All right, Jack. Be well.